Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to be taking a look at some of the questions that you have sent in since our last Q&A episode. So I titled these episodes Reading Your Questions, and then I've organized the episodes, or this is only our second one, so what I've been doing is I've been organizing the episodes according to like types of questions that all kind of complement or go together. And for this one, a lot of you, I aggregated questions that a lot of you were directing not only toward me, but toward Ashley and me together. Some individually for Ashley, some for us as a married couple. And I thought they would make kind of a fun episode, and it's always fun to have Ashley on. So that is what we're going to do today. Before we get into it, as always, don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments and reflections. And if you have more questions for future episodes, feel free to drop those in the comment section. We have someone who collects them for us. You can find transcripts of any of my daily talks on the website, nightlightastrology.com, where next week we will be starting to promote my fall program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic. You can go and start learning more about that now before promotion officially begins next week by going over to the website, nightlightastrology.com, and checking out the courses page. Go to the first year program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, to learn more. Or for more information on any of our programs, you can check out the course list there. My readings are also, the wait time has been coming down because we've restructured the way that the scheduling is working. So you also have less long to wait for a birth chart reading. If you want to sign up for one, you can do that over there on the website as well. Any questions, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. Well, on that note, I'm very happy to have Ashley, my lovely wife, back on the show today. Hey.
Hello. Good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. And, you know, the fun thing is that I know what these questions are, but I have hid them. Ashley does not know what they are. And that, but by the way, I have not, I've deliberately not sat down and like written out my answers or anything, just so that way it's a level playing field. So that Ashley and I both have not had any time to prep, and that makes it kind of fun. So we've got 10 questions that you guys have today. We're going to be reading your questions, doing our best to answer them. And I think that this is fun because we can talk a little bit about astrology. We can talk about herbs. We can talk about all the topics that you guys are curious to hear us speak to. And thank you to everybody who submitted these questions. And again, if you ever have a question you'd like to submit, you can just throw it in the chat box and just mark that it's for a future Q&A episode. Just let us know that that's what you're asking. And then we aggregate those. And then occasionally we're doing these episodes because, frankly, you guys send in questions year round, and there's just no way that I can respond emails, Instagram texts, all these different things. So this is kind of a way of making sure that we also acknowledge and honor. You guys are asking really nice questions. And as people that you listen to, you know, you listen to my channel regularly, a lot of you guys do, or semi-regularly, you want to know a little bit more about the people that you're listening to, or you want to ask our opinions about different topics in astrology. So today we're focusing on questions that you sent us about marriage, family, business, and spirituality, and really the intersection of all of those things. And that's probably most of you guys know, or seem to have known, who wrote in these questions, that Ashley and I have been together since 2011 and owned a yoga studio for almost a decade, and then have still continued to run our businesses together. Our yoga studio was called Sky House Yoga, but it was kind of an umbrella for Nightlight Astrology and Ashley's herbal medicine, Sky House Herbs. And then we had yoga offerings and facilitated all sorts of classes and different practitioners in our yoga studio. So a lot of these questions come from those of you who know that we have a background running a business together as a married couple. And they were really, I thought, really some thoughtful questions that came in. But then there's some fun individual questions getting that you had for each of us individually. So I've kind of broken it up in and we'll kind of alternate answering some of your questions as well. You ready?
Ready. Let's do this.
All right, let's do it. All right, question number one. I have to question the premise of this question. What goes into a successful, healthy marriage from your perspective? Now, this person, I'm summarizing what people wrote in, and this was a question that has been repeated in a number of different ways. And first of all, for all of those of you out there who seem to think that Ashley and I have a healthy marriage, that's very flattering. Thank you. I don't know. We are not qualified to speak as experts of some kind of perfect. So like, I just, first of all, will just say that's very flattering. Those of you who ask this type of question for us, I think we probably have just as many problems and challenges as most couples who are on the path of marriage. So I don't want to answer this question from some kind of delusional place that, you know, we're, you know what I mean? So,
yeah,
but I don't know. I mean, I'll let Ashley start. What do you think? Let's put it this way.
Yeah.
Success is a relative term, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. Health might be, I like the word health a little bit better.
Sure.
Insofar as we've had a healthy marriage, and I think both of us agree that our marriage has, we've been blessed with a pretty healthy marriage. What are some of the things that you think have gone into it? And I'll give my perspective too.
Sure. I think one of the main things is that we really like each other and we're interested in each other. I mean, when I first met you, I thought what the kinds of things you were into and interested in and the way you articulated yourself, you were just an interesting person and an attractive person. And I feel like that interest has never, you know, it's never waned. Like we've always had this curiosity about each other and interest and liking each other. I feel like that's been really big. And then I think another thing is we've been pretty adaptable over the years. And I think that for me is something that I've seen, you know, we've had to work on. I think sometimes it's like there's a part of each of us that wants to kind of stay in the way things were, but life as we know, like it right. doesn't stop changing. So you have to adapt. And I feel like in our marriage, we've been able to make changes, you know, like mm-hmm. hard changes, like closing down our yoga studio. That was not an easy choice, but we could both see, and I think we communicated really well, like, okay, this isn't working anymore. We need to make a choice. We need to adapt to what's different, which for us was having children, really changed the way we ran our business. And then, you know, during the pandemic, we realized where we were living wasn't conducive to our souls and who we are and the way and the pace that we want to live. And so we made some hard choices of moving and relocating our family yep. and adapting to what those changing needs were. So I think to start us off, I think those like liking each other, having, being able to adapt and change together, you know, like mm-hmm. Changing as a unit and talking that through. I think that's been, really key in what's been going really well for us, you know, like those, yeah. I think, yeah, support our strengths.
To me, there's like different ingredients can make for a healthy relationship, and not everyone needs the same ingredients. Mm. So like maybe for us, it's been, you know, I think it's one thing that I would say is probably important for most relationships is that there be just that kind of chemical attraction, like that you're attracted to one another. Because that goes a long way when it comes to affection and romance, and just attraction is probably an ingredient that I would say, like, and if I look at my clients over the years, like when I see people who seem to have healthy relationships, one thing that's there is they seem to be perpetually attracted to their partner. So maybe that's one ingredient that's sort of more commonly a part of successful brews or like crock pots or whatever. But I don't know, for us, I feel like aside from attraction, interest, I would agree, is probably one of the biggest ones. I don't think that relationships need, I don't think as partners, we need to be doing exactly the same things. But I think that interest and even appreciation for what our partners are into and who they are, like, because I feel the same way. Like I was like, you know, I'm coming from the world of entheogens and plant medicine, and I'm into astrology, and I meet an herbalist who's into yoga, and they're not exactly the same things, but there was like, oh, I really appreciate what you like and what you study and what you're good at and, you know, stuff like that, in addition to being attracted to you as a person. And like, I think, yeah, interest is probably a big one for us. We've always been really interested. I would say though, for us, like one of the themes that, because my mom once asked me this question, she was like, you guys, she was, you know, just saying, you guys are doing so well. It was really nice. Like you guys are good parents. Like you're, you know, it's hard being married. You guys are doing a nice job. What do you think about your relationship? You know, is, you know, kind of an ally, or like, what's your, you know, what's the ally that helps you? And I was like, you know, honestly, one thing about Ashley and I that's pretty consistent, not perfect, because there are times where both of us are stubborn and like one is like, oh, I just have to be right. I can't be wrong in this situation. But I would say over the years, one feature of our relationship that I think has been really healthy has been that we care more about each other than being right. That there are times, of course, where we'll dig our heels in, but like pretty consistently, I know that if we're fighting about something, at some point, someone's just going to say, look, I love you more than I need to win this right now. Hmm. And it's like, it's one of the two of us will always do that. And I feel like that's for whatever reason, that space of like, I just love you more than I care to be right in this situation. And I feel like that's true for friendships or relationships that are healthy in general, that you really care more about the person than defending your own position in things. If it gets to the point where it's like, okay, someone, we're going to get hurt, or it's, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. you don't let it get that far where you're like, I'm just going to lay down my sword. I love you more than I care to be right.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I do want to say though, that you've always been historically better at that than me. My devil Taurus, my heels get in the mud a little bit more, but I think that also points to something that I think has made our marriage last, which is being influenced, like being open to being influenced by each other. And I remember someone that I worked with, they mentioned this as like one of the things that they've seen in their therapy practice. For many couples is if you are able to be influenced by your partner, that's a sign of a healthy marriage. And I feel like, you know, you were always able to, especially early on, you know, lay down your sword and be like, look, you know what? I'd rather be wrong than be far away from you. And, you know, I was like, whoa, you know, because I didn't grow up with that. That was not modeled to me. So I feel like, you know, watching you be, you know, do that and say, you know what? I'm sorry, I'm wrong. And me being like, oh, and then saying, can I do that? And you know, I think eventually then that became a practice because I was allowing you to influence me and change my perception of what a relationship looks like. And so I started adapting that and it felt so much better. I was like, wow, this is a great, this is a much better way to be with your partner.
That's such a good point. Being able to be influenced by another person in a relationship. And I think this extends again to like friendships even is, you know, I would say by the same token over the years, I tend to be, you know, I've tended to be the more structured, disciplined person with habits and practices. And you've really taught me not that I don't need them, but you've taught me I've been able to receive your influence in saying you can hold these things in a more gentle and less rigid way. Like you can have your daily this or your daily that, but you don't have to hold it in a way that's like abrasive or hard or, you know, like militant. So, I mean, that's an example of how you've influenced me in the opposite direction. But I think that's a great point though. Overall, it's like, okay, so there's maybe it's important to be attracted and it's important to have interest or appreciation for who your partner is and what they're into. Adaptability and being able to change together and influence, being able to be influenced by the other person, caring more about the relationship than having to be right. And I think what we're talking about really is when we're at our best, because of course there's going to be days and little seasons in a relationship where these are the lessons you're learning because you're being we're being stubborn or something, you know? So it's like, it's not, I don't want to make it sound like we're saying that we've always, but these are things that we've learned.
You've developed. Yeah.
Yeah. The only other thing that I would think to add would be that for us sharing spiritual, we've had different ways of pursuing divinity or spirituality or whatever we want to call it, but we've always, that's something that we've shared. And frankly, I think that one of the things I hear the most in my astrology practice from people who are frustrated in their relationships is that they're with a wonderful person, but they don't share a spiritual orientation. And that can be really hard. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into the crock pot again, and not every ingredient. I don't think we're trying to say anything about what anyone else should do, but just, you know, kind of some of the stuff that we've done. And so, I don't know, hopefully you guys find that interesting. Let's see, let's go into number two. What is the, another question that came up in a few different forms was, what is the best and worst parts of running a business together as a couple?
We get to the nitty gritties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'll start with what the best is.
Okay.
I think the best is that if you not everyone's meant, like, every relationship is meant to do that, first of all. And like, I don't think it's some ideal that's like, ooh, you're, and I really, really don't like, over the years, sometimes because we've had a business together, people have called us a power couple.
Yeah.
I loathe that description because we're not like, you know, I would say that our desire to work together hasn't been like, let's join forces and conquer the world. You
exactly.
Know,
it's been more like, this is fun. Like, let's keep having fun together.
Yes. And that's my favorite part is like, if you enjoy the person you're working with, and I think we really enjoy working with each other, and you have good rapport and you're able to like share and balance decision-making and creativity, then it's really fun to work together. That's the obvious benefit, is it's just super fun and you get to spend time together and you get to share a portion of your life where, honestly, like a lot of people, you know, they don't see their spouse all day long until the evening, and then there's kids. And so we've been really fortunate to share our days together often in a workspace that's, you know, creative and pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And so can I go to the worst?
Yeah. Yeah. No, go for it. Don't hurt my feelings.
I will not hurt your feelings. I think you would agree with me on this. I think there's two things that are really hard. I think one is like personal space. I mean, right now we have separate offices, but for, you know, in our first few spaces, we shared offices, and that was really hard. I remember you being like, do you have to type so loud? And I'd be like, you know,
your breathing is loud.
So I think like the proximity, like if you have a small workspace, like that can be really challenging, because I think as humans, we need personal, you know, like we need to have privacy and space for some parts of the creative process. So I think that can be challenging. The other one
we
is
we did eventually get separate offices.
We did. That changed. I think that really helped us with our work. And we would still like yell across like, babe, do you want some tea? Or, you know, like come in here and take a look at this thing that I'm making. And, you know, so the proximity is nice also, you know, because you can, that creative flow can happen when you're near each other. One thing that I think is tricky though is expectations. Is like, I think one thing that a lot of couples can run into when they're running a business together is they're expecting their partner to do something, and that might not be part of the original agreement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's this image of like, you know, every relationship, and I think this works really well for business, you know, couples working as in a business together, is like, there's, you know, every couple has two baskets. One basket is where you have your expectations, and the other basket is where you have your hopes, visions, and dreams. And so, you know, if you can, instead of putting things into the expectation basket, you should always be putting more and more things into your hopes, visions, and dreams basket for your partner. So like basically anticipating, what are their needs? What are their hopes? How can I help? And continuing to fill that basket, because otherwise, if you're putting your expectations, if that basket's becoming full, then it creates more pressure and on the relationship as a whole. Yeah. And so I think, you know, as long as the communication is really clear, and you know, if you need something that needs to be done, like my dad always used to say this, my mom would be like, we need to clean out the garage. And my dad would say, who, you and the little mouse in your pocket? Like, who's we? You know, so, you know, instead of being like, you know, we need to do this. Like I've learned, if I want to see something happen, then I just do it. And maybe I'll ask for help, but I don't expect my partner to do things if they're things I want to have happen.
Right. I would say another difficult part is a challenging part is that when you're working with, you know, someone that you love, they're ideally you want to both feel like you're carrying an equal load and delivering equal results. But the truth is that it, in our history, it doesn't work like that. There were times when the yoga studio and Ashley's yoga teacher training programs carried the bulk of our revenue. There's been times like more so now where Ashley's spending more full time mothering, and you know, my programs are sort of carrying the weight. But I think it's a challenge, one that I think actually we've adapted to really well. It's not really a challenge for us anymore, but earlier on it was like, well, I'm supposed to be, my program should be as successful and and popular as Ashley's or vice versa. And so I think you also have to, if you're running a business with someone, just recognize that there's going to be peaks and valleys for each person in terms of their, how much they're doing, how much they're capable of doing, and how what the results are. And you have to, you can't keep score. You have to just trust that things will balance out. And as long as, you know, you have an understanding of how to ideally share the load and share the results, no matter whose they are. That's something we had to learn pretty early on.
Yeah. Yeah. And like this quote, like, if it's good for you, it's good for us. If it's good for me, it's good for us. And I think that is really helpful, you know, is celebrating each other's successes because they're shared successes.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. It's like, I can't think of right now, though Ashley's not doing teaching her herbal programs, right? The success that I have doing my programs isn't possible if Ashley isn't doing a million things during the day with our girls right now, because they're little and at a stage where they need that. And that was the choice that Ashley made. I can't sit back and think, oh, well, this is my success and Ashley's success is with parenting. No, it's like, it's a team effort and everyone's success is everyone's success. That's really how we try to look at it. Well, this leads into question number three for Ashley. Ashley, what led you to your decision to take time off from herbal work and focus on mothering? Like, how did you get to that point? And several questions like this have come in. And also follow-up questions, which some people asked, some people didn't, but I thought I'd include, which was, do you ever regret it? Do you ever regret not having kids, but do you ever regret taking, basically, pulling back on the amount of work you were doing to focus on mothering? But what are your thoughts on these questions?
Yeah, well, for me, it was just a matter of work life, work home balance and self care balance too. And I've always been a very ambitious person. Mercury, Mars, and Venus all in Aries. And
in your 10th house.
In my 10th house. So I've always been a very ambitious, driven, want to be successful, want to do work in communities. And so when I had kids, it really humbled me. I was like, wow, I can't do it all at the level that I want to do it. And so I think it was a gradual process for me. It wasn't like one day I was like, okay, I've got to change gears. It was really more kind of like the way water wears away a stone. As I was paying more attention to myself and my rhythms and my relationships with my husband, with my kids, and with the business, it was like slowly all the signs were saying less, you know, you got to take this one off now. Okay, no more teacher training programs. Got it. Okay, well, now we're going to move everything herbally online. Okay, now we're going to close down the physical studio. Okay, so it was like slowly over time, I was letting things go off my plate. And I know not for every, you know, for some people that work full time, it's might be more like a yes or no. It might be like, I'm either working or I'm not. But for me, it was a gradual process because everything I do has to be slow. So it took time for me to realize it and to notice I was just able to be a better version of myself as I started letting go of more and more responsibilities at work. And it was interesting because as I was letting go of those things, you know, Adam's work started to grow. So it was like it was like feedback from the universe. I was like paying attention, like, okay, how is it going to look and feel for us as a unit if I start to pull back? And then Adam's work started to build. And I was like, okay, this feels okay. This feels good. It feels like things are moving in the right direction. And yeah, I mean, I think for me, having my girls, I just, at this stage in their lives and in my life, like, I can't think of any better work. And I'm still an herbalist. Like, my girls are in the garden with me. We dry plants, you know, we harvest vegetables together.
We have our community herbal medicine gatherings that you've been hosting. So there's
So there's still, you know, I'm still engaged in the herbal work, and I'm being still, you know, focusing on being a mom. And I'm finding that they are actually, there's so much more crossover than I would have anticipated. I think I originally thought you have to pick one or the other, ultimately, but I've found ways to blend the things I love and my work with being a mom. And I don't regret it. I think early on it was hard because I missed community. And that was when COVID hit too. And I just felt really kind of isolated and alone. And I don't think I don't think that's unique to me during that time. So I don't regret that change at all. And I know that as my girls get older, that I can build my career back if I so choose. And right now I'm in a place of just really appreciating and being happy where I am and keeping my finger on the pulse of the herbal world and doing workshops here and there, doing interviews with herbalists. I taught this summer at a few herbal gatherings and, you know, did a few different workshops and conferences. So, you know, I don't think I'm will ever let that thread go completely of my work, but I'm letting it kind of be an underlying, it's like an underground well now, rather than it being a river that I'm trying to, you know, move and like direct.
Sometimes so. I think of it like a fire that you're continuing to tend to. It's not the massive bonfire that it was, but you're also not letting it die out.
Yeah.
You're keeping that flame lit. No, the next question is also for you. And this came, the person that wrote this one was sharing that basically there's a lot of women out there who don't have a choice to be a mom or to work. They have to work.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people are in that situation, whether it's single parents or, you know, both parents are working to make ends meet. And this question was, broadly speaking, what advice would you give, or what's worked for you so far in terms of balancing your own needs or your own spirituality with being a mom? And then this person added, and maybe by extension, those mothers out there who are also working full time. And, you know, Ashley's did have a period for several years of working full time and mothering. And so she can speak to this, but it's obviously not the exact, you're able to focus a little bit more on mothering now. And so that takes a little bit off the plate that some people may not be able to hold. But, and then by extension, this person was just sort of asking, what kinds of practices or what kinds of self-care habits do you have that go into keeping that balance?
It's a really good question. And I feel like I'm still figuring it out. So I don't feel like I don't have like a tried and true formula. And I think I've learned a lot from what doesn't work, you know, like I think a lot of things I've tried, like being really rigid, like wake up, do yoga, this, that, you know, and like being really rigid didn't work. And being really kind of lazy didn't work. Like letting things happen didn't really work either. So I think at this point in my life, one thing I've been really developing is being able to actually hear my own needs. Like for I think most of my life, I didn't even know what I needed or wanted or like, I was very outward oriented. And while I was a yoga teacher and teach, you know, like I really had to work hard on cultivating that inner space. And I'm still doing that. And for me, taking a little bit of time every morning to just check in with myself and say, how am I feeling? And sometimes it doesn't happen in the morning, but just at some point during the day, Ashley, how are you? Are you doing okay? Mm-hmm. Have you had enough water? Do you need a little walk? Like, I'm like a, you know, complicated, you know, dog or like houseplant, you know, it's like, did you get your sunshine? Did you get your water? But sometimes just asking those simple questions and taking that moment to ask, to check in will really help me orient how I use my energy and how I use my resources during the day.
Yeah. I'll just interject really quickly here. One thing that you've started doing and that I've seen really work for you, especially when you're in the space of like the chaos of the kids and their wildest, you know, moments or whatever, is you'll tell the kids, you'll literally say, mommy needs to sit down for a minute and just check in with herself and see how she's feeling. And I need to take care of myself for a second. Right. And our kids are a little bit older now where like they can play and stuff, but mm-hmm. you know, taking that moment, or, you know, when the kids were littler, you would ask
me. I would just walk outside. I would be like, babe, mom, like, yeah. I need a sanity moment. Like, I just need to stand outside and like stare into space for a minute to
you'd be like, and don't be surprised if I wander off into the woods and never return.
I always came back though.
You know, of course you did. But like, I think that is such a simple, powerful thing that I've seen you bring in and you've taught me to do too, which is just, in the midst of chaos, when we're most likely to start, I don't know, protecting ourselves, self-medicating in not so healthy ways, whatever, to just sit down and be like, I need to check in with myself and see how I'm feeling and what I might need in this moment. And obviously, like, we're both still completely insane people and we don't have anything figured out, but I've seen that really work for you in terms of just catching your breath and especially when it's like, okay, I'm close to spinning out. Let me just sit down and check in.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's like that's the core practice that I have. And ideally, if I can do that in the morning before the kids even wake up, you know, Adam and I have a practice now, which is really helpful, where we just sit and we read together and, you know, just having that quiet adult time. And I think being connected to, you know, for me, being connected to you as like, you know, another stable base and making sure that connection stays strong throughout the day really helps me from spinning out. And I know not everyone, you know, has that. So that might make those check-ins or even checking in with a friend, just like having points of checking in with yourself and checking in with those who you love can be really helpful. And in terms of being present, you know, one thing that I've been doing lately with the girls that I think has been really helpful for all of us is like getting down to their level. You know, like some are screaming because the shirt doesn't fit the way she wanted it to and her hair is sticking up weird and what, and it's like insanity. It's like, okay, I want to say it's not a big deal. Let's move on. But if I can actually just get down to their level and like literally get eye level with them and take a deep breath and just acknowledge like, you're having a really hard time right now, aren't you? Yeah, I am. and then just like, you know, acknowledging where the girls are at in that moment and then letting them just, you know, like just creating a little bubble of safety for me and for them to just be present for like, even if it's just like 30 seconds and then like, gathering ourselves together and then being able to transition to the next thing. Because I know when I try to bulldoze and push the kids through feelings and push myself through discomfort, it always backfires.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, again, like the answer that is the most sincere and real answer is, well, that is very, it's very flattering that you would think that we would have any answers to right. these questions. It's very easy to project a nice little image of ourselves, you know, in social media, because this is what we do for a living. And we're not going to project images of ourselves, you know, with not having bathed, looking like we got punched in the eye, got in a fight with a raccoon and, right. you know, are screaming at our own kids or whatever, you know, like.
Or like what happened yesterday in the carpool line. I lost the plot for a minute. I just, I spun out, you know, and it's like, but you know, the thing is that was a low moment for me. And then, you know, after I had my total meltdown, then, you know, when we got home, I said to the kids, I'm sorry. You know what? Like mom really freaked out. I didn't know, you know, like it was a really stressful moment. They were telling me to go, but the kid was in the car and there was just this whole thing. And, you know, just being able to say to them, like, I had a hard moment and I wasn't my best self and I'm really sorry and I'll do better tomorrow.
Honestly, like more than like practices and theories and ideas about how to be the best anything, I feel like just the ability to keep it real and be human and laugh and acknowledge your own absurdities and failures, that goes so much further, whether it's marriage or parenting, than anything you're proactively doing to be flawless. You know, it's like, it's actually just do, you know, kind of like, I think we're all just doing our best. And the thing that probably helps more than anything is being able to laugh at ourselves and say we're sorry and just keep trying, you know? But anyway, next question. Adam, can you explain your business model? It seems cool, but I don't really understand it. How did you come up with it? So this, I got a bunch of these types of questions. And I thought this one was, you know, it's worth explaining. So there's a whole history behind it. So when I started my astrology business, there was an organization in New York City, and I don't know if they're there anymore, but it was called something like Yoga for the People or Yoga to the People or something. And it was donation-based yoga. And I went to the studio and I thought it was really cool. I just thought, this is awesome. At the beginning of my astrology practice, I needed a way to get experience and clientele. And I didn't feel right charging some kind of standardized rate when I hadn't yet had any experience. I was in an ayahuasca ceremony and I had a kind of like a visionary idea / epiphany. I recalled in this kind of memory in the ceremony going to the University of Minnesota and letting the dental students do my teeth cleaning. Or my mom took us there when I was a kid and let the students do our teeth cleaning, and it was free, or it was like discounted or something. So anyway, I had this memory in the ayahuasca ceremony, and I was in the stage where I was contemplating my business model, and I was getting a lot of advice from different people about what to do. Some really good advice from my astrology teachers at the time and so forth. And I just decided, in order to gather experience, I'm going to do donation-based readings. I'm going to do 500 of them. And once I get to 500, like, I'll set a rate. And then I figured every so often, as I get more experience and the years go by and I feel comfortable, like, I'll raise my rate. So that's kind of how it started. But then I started teaching classes, and the community classes that I was teaching were, it was really sort of a meetup group. And so I made the tuition set your own fee, monthly fee. I had a suggested scale, right? But you could set your own fee and you paid that. And everyone was aware that a significant portion of that went to covering the rent for the place that I rented in New York City for the class itself, right? And so that allowed for just a very wide range of people to study astrology, because it, like, astrology courses can be really expensive. And so I just started realizing that, oh, you know what, part of my dharma as an astrologer is going to be that for as long as I'm doing this, whatever services I'm providing, I want there to be flexibility so that nobody is priced out. Like, I'm a business, I'm trying to earn money, I'm trying to make a living, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm not trying to hide that or anything. You know, that's for me, that's a part of what I'm about. But I don't have any background in business, right? So this, it's been I like the astrology, the business part has been like something I've had to learn, you know? But anyway, but I thought, no matter what though, I want to make sure that all of the courses I teach, workshops I host, you know, are like our entire speaker series has always been free, open to the public or by donation. And all of the content that I produce online, at the end of the year, I ask people, hey, pitch in, and here's discounted prices on my courses and stuff as rewards. If you enjoy the content that I put out there for free, that doesn't price anyone out, then pitch back in through the Kickstarter. And that's how I earn my living. We try to give good rewards in the process. All of my classes have donation-based or sliding scale or reduced rate tuitions at different stages. We've had different ways of doing it, but my vision is to make sure that a spiritual subject like astrology is affordable. At a certain point, because I had a limited amount of space and time, I had to set standardized rates for my readings. But in the new year, our goal is in 2024 to be launching a reading clinic that will bring back that original donation basis, so that readings, we now have a reading service for people that doesn't price anyone out. And then all of our classes, I would say 50% of our students over the course of the history of Nightlight Astrology, we've had thousands of people go through our programs, right? 50% have been on some form of need-based tuition because they otherwise couldn't afford, you know, the rate of a 1 or 2 year astrological training program. So, you know, I'm not a nonprofit. I'm a for-profit business, but I try to make sure that in the way that we do things, there's consideration for people coming from different economic situations. And I'm especially passionate about making sure that, like the ancient astrologers said, anyone who has a sincere desire to study astrology shouldn't be turned away because of money. That's literally written in a text by Firmicus Maternus that it's left a really deep, lasting impression on me. Ashley's herbal programs always had sliding scale tuitions. Our yoga studio had donation-based classes or set your own rate memberships. So this is extended into our yoga and herbal work over the years that we've always worked like that. And then probably most notably is the Kickstarter that I do at the end of the year, where, like I said, I produce the 5-day-a-week content year round. And I'm like, hey, if you value it, donate. And that's how I earn my living. And then hopefully people also can take advantage of the various rewards that we offer. So you're not only donating and getting great content, hopefully year round that you love, but you can even get, you know, a reading or discounted tuition on a class or something like that. So I like to think of it as, you know, a vision of openness economically that is about making sure that we're stewarding the wisdom and intelligence of these subjects in ways that don't turn anyone away, that really meet people where they're at. We've given out tons of scholarships over the years too, while also, you know, trying to earn a living and be a successful business. So that's kind of the gist of it. Do you want to add anything to that? Your notes or observations over the years of how we've done business?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the things that really attracted me to you, was just that generosity of spirit and just, you know, like, I'm really doing this because I love it. And I trust. I mean, there were so many points along the way early on for you. And I know for us, when we started Sky House, where we were like, are we going to make it? Like, but we always did. It was like magic. It was like, okay, we trust God and the universe that if we are doing what we love and we're doing it, you know, if we're in integrity in what we're doing, we'll never be home. You know, we'll have everything that we need. And yep. And it's been amazing to see how it's been true. It's like, you know, I just remember times where we're like, we don't have enough for rent. And then all of a sudden we'd get somebody make like a large donation for one of our programs. And we'd be like, we can pay our rent, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's been pretty magical to see that. And then having some times when things get really quiet and it's, mm-hmm. you know, you get really aware,
yeah,
like your senses get piqued and you're like, okay, this is a moment. We need to just be really aware and cautious. And I think that's part of the magic of living in the spirit of this model.
Well, the next question follows, which is, how do you balance being spiritual with being an entrepreneur? Well, I'll just say briefly that, you know, there are ways in which the two things in this world are definitely like opposites. You know, the desire for power, wealth, success, prominence, fame, etc., is a huge temptation that is a part of any business endeavor, especially when you start tasting a little success. That's just honest. Like, I will tell you that, you know, up until very recently when we started doing a little bit better, it was very, what's the phrase? Hand to mouth. Is that what mm-hmm. they say?
Yeah.
It was like, it was tight, like all the time. And, so we're not, it's been very new for us to not be in that mode because the business, and it took 10 years of operating the business before the business sort of climbed out of the margins or whatever. But I would say that it's easy once you start doing well and you're not as worried about, you know, the things we were more worried about, like will the business even last, right? You get, but you know, in my experience, the thing that keeps it spiritual is like, it's just because you have some success earning money or as a business that you're doing well, that doesn't mean that somehow you've drifted from your spiritual center. It's not evidence that somehow you're a less spiritual person because you're doing well. To me, the evidence has been when I start forgetting that, you know, I think about like the universe giveth and the universe taketh away. Mm-hmm. And if what we've been, if what has come in, came in ways that I don't fully understand. It wasn't like a part of some plan that we had. It just sort of happened because we just kept at it. Then I also recognize that at any point it could leave. And what I've noticed is that at the times where I'm drifting from my spiritual center, and that does happen for me, I think it happens for everyone, then I start to take things for granted. I start to think, this will be here forever. This won't. And I think for me, it's about maintaining that humble. It's like, you know, I got to keep my sandals off. I'm on holy ground. Nothing is, I don't take anything for granted. Don't act like it will all be here forever. The success that you're having or whatever. And to me, I think whether one, no matter what level you're at as an entrepreneur, I think it's about recognizing that you're ideally, if you're doing something spiritual, you know, for a living, in other words, that you're remembering what it's about, why you're doing what you're doing. And then when success comes, you're also remembering what it's about and why you're doing what you're doing. And you're not suddenly letting all of your values and practices get distorted. You're not suddenly acting like, well, now I'm someone totally different and I can't, this will last forever. And it's almost like, no, like the I Ching for me has been invaluable in some of these lessons. Like, you know, you, just when things are going well, that's when you have a tendency to trip and, you know, over the tiger's tail, and then the tiger will turn and bite you. So it's like, I think the stakes actually get a little bit higher if you're a spiritual person as an entrepreneur, because it's, with success materially comes the temptation to fall asleep. It's a big part of it. And I think that's been, that the challenge has just been how to stay awake and how to stay humble and how to remember what my values are and not get lost in the distraction of success. Because ultimately, you know, the success you have too is really about what do you do with it? You know, it's like, you just want to get stuff or I don't tell anyone how they should live or how they should spend their money or whatever. But, you know, for us, I would say, for example, you know, when we do well, for us, it's about, well, like, let's make sure that we can at some point retire. We're in a job where there's no one looking out for our retirement but us, right? So that's a big deal.
There's no 401k.
Yeah, exactly. So like a lot of the success for us that we've had on a business level is going into making sure that we're okay as small business owners with no one else looking out for us when we retire. So I mean, that's like one thing that to me is like an appropriate use of success. And there's other examples too, education, spiritual experience, taking care of our family, making sure that we have some quality times together as a family, doing things that are nourishing for our spirits as a family, going to Ashley's herbal conference as a family in Colorado, that, you know, these kinds of things. So I think it's also, it's like, it's success isn't the enemy of spirituality. It only is if you don't take that success and feed it right back into the same values that were a part of any success you had in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I think too, just, you know, if you really believe in God and you really are a spiritual person, then in your work, you're paying attention to the signs and you're really open to feedback. And I think that that's one way for me that I have try to pay attention and really listen to higher wisdom is like, what's the feedback I'm being given? Like, oh, I've been sick 5 times in 4 months. Like, that's feedback. So what am I doing with my work that's off balance, or how am I off balance here? And, you know, just, yeah, like things like that, just paying attention to what the feedback is and then adjusting accordingly.
Right. Right. I think like one of the things that you also have to, someone like me or Ashley, who are also projecting an image of ourselves out into the public as creative content producers, there's a performative element to what we do. It's like, in making sure that I am not getting overly identified with a persona that is a part of what I've constructed as a business owner. You know, it's like, that was a huge part, for example, for me, of going through the spiritual initiation, changing my name, and then realizing that there was something about all of that that was the construction of a kind of spiritual persona that wasn't really who I am. And like, that was a really difficult learning experience for me. And I think there's just something about being in the public in general, in our jobs, where part of it is about balancing managing a projection, a social construct that you've created as a performer, as a creator. But it's like your little avatar, but you can't get identified with it. You have to step away from it. I think some of the biggest traps for me have been that, you know, I tend to get, especially when you get trolls, right? Like people who are just brutally criticizing you or attacking you, that then there's this desire to defend myself or manipulate my image in a way that avoids getting any kind of negative response. And getting caught in all of that stuff is a very easy place for me to come right out of my spiritual center and start caring about very superficial things.
Yeah.
Anyway, number 7, Ashley, what advice do you have for people who want to study herbs but have no idea where to start?
Wow. That, I mean, I think it depends where you live and what kind of things you're interested in with herbs, because there's a lot of different, like, herbalism is such a big field. You know, some people really want to approach it from the science end. And there's certainly programs that are more science-based. Some people really like the folk traditions and medicine making. That one's a lot easier to learn at home on your own through home courses and self-study and taking online apprenticeships. And then, then there's more kind of like spagyric, kind of energetic, a little bit more of the... Yeah, I guess like the pattern, like where astrology and herbalism blend, and that would take more study and more time. So I think just sort of looking at, I think you can enter in from any place, but I think it's really important as a beginner herbalist to figure out what sparks your joy the most about plants. And if it's just simply gardening, then start there. If it's making medicine, start there. If it's reading the science, find some good books. And then as you start with the part that you really love the most, you'll start to see the doors open and you'll naturally meet people and find your way into courses, programs, or just even friendships and local communities where you can plug in.
Sub question that I thought I might omit because I didn't want to put you on the spot, but now I feel like putting you on the spot is, will you ever teach your herbal programs again? Someone asked.
Question mark. I'm not I'm not sure. I think I know right now in the next year, the answer is no, because I'm still in mom mode and that still feels like where I need to be putting my energy. I do think eventually I will. I loved my apprenticeships. I had a year 1 and a year 2. And I love teaching. I love seeing people like light up when they start to understand these connections between plants and energetics and chemistry and botany. So I don't think I'll ever stop teaching, but how that works, I have other ideas too that are kind of brewing of different ways of offering, like maybe in like segments or modules, like maybe doing like a 6-week module in one particular area. And then people can put these modules together and then get a certificate. So I'm kind of like in the dreaming. I'm in the cave of dreaming right now in terms of how my programs will come forth in their next phase.
Fair enough. We have just a few questions left and we'll maybe try to do these like lightning round answers.
Yeah, got it. Yeah.
What are each of your spiritual practices? What would you recommend for someone who wants to start a spiritual practice but doesn't know where to start? Same kind of question about the, you know, like the herbs. I would say, first of all, one thing that we share together is we both attend Al-Anon, which is really super helpful. You know, for a lot of people out there, 12-step programs, if you have a background with addiction, can be an amazing practice. Often the working the steps, the different literature, and Ashley can say more about that. But we both do Al-Anon. In the mornings, we typically read a little bit from a few different devotional texts, some poetry. And then we usually are reading some kind of spiritual text. Maybe like right now we're reading No Bad Parts about internal family systems. Like we read things that are uplifting and educational for the soul, the spirit, psychology, stuff like that. We each also see a therapist regularly. I see a Jungian. And so we, I think those are like really important, like Al-Anon, weekly therapy, and morning devotional times. Those are probably the main three. I've gone on and off to Quaker services, which are kind of an a communal silence, which is really beautiful. We've gone to an Episcopal church here or there, and we go to Taizé, which is a kind of meditation, choral meditation. It's really beautiful prayer service that the Episcopal church has on Friday nights sometimes. But we do all sorts of stuff. There's a cacao circle Ashley's gone to, and we
ecstatic dance sometimes.
Ecstatic dance, or so I think it's we have kind of a crock pot of different things going on. For me, for years it was mantra meditation. We've had yoga practices over the years, so I kind of think it's different at different stages, you know. And the main thing for me is that sacred time before I make content every day. That's really always been really important for me as a content creator, that prior to sitting down, that I've taken some time to be with my soul. Oh, and right now that's been in the form of Ashley and I returning to some of the practices we had before the kids were born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll just add, you know, in addition to all of the things Adam just said, for me, time outside is a big part of my spiritual health and practice. So for me, gardening or taking the dog on a walk, or sometimes literally just stepping outside in the front yard and like looking at the moon and just taking a few deep breaths, like that does wonders for my soul. So, but I think if you're looking to start a spiritual practice and you don't know where to start, you know, you don't know where to begin. It's like my last question, just like what inspires you? Like what practices or what elements of spiritual life really draw you in? And then just making sure that you create daily time for that.
Yeah. I mean, journaling, walking, you know, to me for many people, I also consider, I work out at the gym 5 days a week with a trainer. Not everyone can do that, but I think exercise for many people is a spiritual practice, because it's not just working your body, but when you work your body, the stuff inside of you that, you know, when you move your blood and you move your breath, you move stuff and it comes up for you to look at. And so exercise, honestly, for a lot of people is very spiritual, and there's so many different ways to exercise. Number 9, what are the biggest mistakes you've made as a business owner? Let's just list a few rapid fire.
You go okay, first. I'll start. Trying to do too many things, jack of all trades, master of none. I mean, for me, just trying to please too many people and do too many things because of that's what other people were telling me they wanted, rather than really focusing on what I loved and what I was good at, like my natural gifts.
Yeah. For me, it was the realization. I used to be someone who thought if there were 5 emails in the inbox still at the end of the day, that meant I had to answer all 5 of them. And I wouldn't, I was just like, you, like a dog with a stick that won't let go of it. I just didn't trust that I can take time. Those things will be there tomorrow and I can get to them tomorrow. I used to have this kind of urgency that like everything would fall apart if I didn't get everything done today. Yeah. And that caused me. And the thing is that it's like one of those digging a hole in the sand, you know, and then the sand just keeps pouring in. So I realized this is weird. And maybe I'm making this up in my head, but it felt like once I realized that I could just take a little time and be like, okay, I got a lot done today. I'll get to the rest of that tomorrow. Because if I emptied everything, by the time I woke up, there'd be a new set of things that would take just as long. There was no end to it. And so I realized that like, there's never going to be I can't get everything done, and because there's just going to be more. So now I've just found more spaciousness and I'm not like obsessive about having to get everything done because I can't feel complete until it is, because I've realized it's just neurotic and there's always going to be more. So I just take my time more. Number 10, last but not least, who are your favorite thinkers, artists, musicians? And then someone else asks, what are your favorite TVs, books, or movies?
Ooh, can I go first?
Yeah, go.
Okay. So I would say like the person who inspires my soul is Mary Oliver, who is a nature poet. And we read her daily, and I read her sometimes even more than that. And I read her to my girls. I have my girls read her poetry. So for me, like she speaks a language that I need to hear regularly. So she's been a huge influence on my life. Jerry Garcia, as like an artist and musician and thinker, and sort of cultural revolutionary, has really inspired me since I was like 15. I've just always found the Grateful Dead and the work of Jerry Garcia and Robert Hunter and like their lyrics, just all of like that whole world is like a big part of my consciousness and has really shaped who I am. And I think also Matthew Wood, when I studied herbalism, it was more scientifically based. And I felt like there was a part that was never really, like the more magical and energetic part of herbalism, and that the herbalism that was connected to the old way of thinking about plants. And so when I started studying with Matthew Wood in 2000 and what it had been 9 or 10, then I like it just blew my mind open. And I have all of his books since I've studied with him. I've sat at his feet. I've sat in circles. I've actually, Adam and I've had him on our podcast before. And now we're friends, which is so cool to like. Like I could just email Matthew Wood and be like, hey, Matt, what do you think about this? But if you don't know about Matthew Wood's work, one of his books that I think is absolutely essential to have is called The Book of Herbal Wisdom by Matthew Wood. And that's, I think, an herbal reference everyone should have. Favorite TV shows? We're watching Outlander right now, and that is by far one of my favorite TV shows series I've ever watched. Movies, I love... Amelie is one that really has stayed with me. I love Totoro, My Neighbor Totoro. It's an animated movie, but that one, like I could watch that one a million times and never get sick of it. So I could go on, but I know I want to leave time for Adam. So,
well, I haven't sat at James Hillman's feet. That would be fun to do that, but James Hillman is like definitely my favorite thinker. I have sat with Ashley on the floor listening in a circle listening to Matthew Wood talk, and he is super cool, I have to say, as an herbalist. Really like him. Let's see. Yeah, James Hillman would be probably my favorite thinker of all time at this point. But I back in the day, it was Alan Watts, Terence McKenna, you know, the psychedelic crew of thinkers. They made a big impact on me. Yeah, favorite artists and musicians. Gosh, I'm not really someone who knows a lot about art. I'm just like, that's pretty, you know, like, but when it comes to musicians, like earlier on, Tom York and Radiohead was easily one of my favorites. A friend of mine got me into him, and yeah, just really deep appreciation for his music. Ashley's just gotten me into the Grateful Dead, as you all know from the million Grateful Dead shirts I now wear, like a total poser. The Grateful Dead, I think, they're the band that has made the biggest impact on me most recently. Like, I sort of am in awe that I never had gotten into them before. Like, it's sort of like this mind-blowing revelation for me because I love them now. Sting has always been a huge favorite of mine, but Crosby, Stills, Nash, and lots of like Neil Young, and you know, so there's like a bunch of classic. I used to love the Smashing Pumpkins. They were one of my favorites. Anyway, favorite TV shows. I loved Game of Thrones up until the end. That was like one of my favorite series of all times. But I love Outlander's really cool. I loved Breaking Bad. That was one of my, I really, really enjoyed. I loved the Ozark.
Oh, that was really good. Ozark,
that was a cool show. Sopranos, you know, there's others too. But I liked Arrested Development. That was a favorite show. If any of you guys ever saw that. But anyway, movies of all time, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, Goonies, Stand By Me, which is probably an all-time favorite, Dead Poets Society. I don't know. There's others. Books. Gosh, yeah. Lord of the Rings, The Narnia Chronicles. Those are like staples. I'm trying to think. Books. There's been, God, I've read so many books, you know, that it's just sort of hard to like grab one. I loved Walt Whitman. Like Walt Whitman poetry has always meant a great deal to me. And I can't think of it. Lord of the Rings, probably easily my favorite books of all time though. So I don't know. That probably rounds it out for me. Thank you guys for these fun questions. This was super fun. Really enjoyed it. I want to point you guys over to Ashley's work if you want to check it out. I highly recommend hitting up her YouTube channel, Skyhouse Herbs, where she has weekly videos on plant spirit medicine. You're going to find a lot of the doctrine of signatures and a symbolic way of approaching plant medicine. It's not just like herbs and science. It's herb science and symbolism. It's a bit like someone who's going to teach you how to look at plants as omens in nature. That's how Ashley's vibe is. And that's, you know, that's why I love her. You're also going to find her on Instagram, Skyhouse Herbs. And then if you want to check out the website for upcoming events that we have, especially in the community medicine garden, that is skyhouseherbs.com. Anything else you want to add in there?
Yeah, we've got one more community garden gathering for September. So if you are listening to this and you're in the Minnesota area, you can go to skyhouseherbs.com, click on events, click on garden gatherings, and you can get the details for that event. And then I just want to say too that we are planning. We are in like the dreaming phase and planning phase of a retreat for next year. So stay tuned for that, because I'm really excited to bring our minds and our hearts together to offer plants and planetary retreat content.
Yeah, for sure. I want to add, by the way, before we close up, it is so nice to receive all of your questions. And please know that we are aboard the same ship of fools as all of the rest of you. We don't know shit. So I just want to end by saying that, because it's really, really important. Like, we do not consider ourselves experts on anything other than.
Yeah, we should have one of those like little labels, like everything said in this video, like please consult with, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Before administering.
Consult with just about anyone other than us.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's so nice to gather your questions, and you know, we are learning and just like everyone else. And if anything we've said today is helpful, then mission accomplished. And otherwise, we hope it was entertaining. So thanks for being here, Ashley. It's just so much fun to make content with you. I love you.
I love you always.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you again soon. Bye.
Bye.